Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
We're talking football with the Professor John Clayton, as we do every day here with Bob, Dave, and more. If you guys have questions for John, you can text those in to 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. We'll try to get to your questions before we let John go. Hello, John.
Hi, how we doing?
Good. You know,
it's been a terrible day.
Why is that, John?
With the winds and the rain and everything else, power's gone out in the house 3 times. It's just been an absolute... I almost had to do the show on an app. Because literally I couldn't get on the show here from home until like 90 seconds before the start of the show.
Did you call the goons from AT&T?
I did not, no, but I was thinking about
it. You know what they would have told you?
What's that?
Reset your password.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you try?
But you know what the bad part for ATT.net? Is now you can't even call. Starting at the beginning of the month, there's no call-ins. I mean, you have to text and email or whatever.
Well, John, I'm glad you're able to be with us right now. Hopefully the power will stay on through this segment.
I would hope.
Fingers crossed. Hey, I was going to ask you about this yesterday, but we ran out of time because I saw a headline asking the question, is it time for the Jets to start shopping Le'Veon Bell? And I'm thinking, who would be in the market for a malcontent who hasn't produced and is making a truckload of money?
The team that seems to be brought up the most would be the Chicago Bears. Because here's the Bear team. It's one of the worst running teams in football, and they don't have much prospects of being able to run. So the thought would be that maybe they can make a trade, and clearly, I mean, you can get one of the biggest discounts you can ever have because, he's got guarantees in his contract. He's making $13 million a year. I mean, you can probably get him for maybe a fifth or sixth round pick. So I don't know. They have the cap room to be able to do it, but I think it might be a consideration just because of how bad the situation is. But again, and I throw this to Dave, it's like, this is so typical Adam Gase. Because, what's prompting this right now? Of course, Adam made the mistake of keeping him in the game when he had a hamstring injury. So he goes on injured reserve for 3 weeks. Now he comes out of injured reserve, and he only lets him on the field for maybe 3/4 of the plays. Le'Veon then goes on Twitter and complains about it. And now the next thing you know, you have Adam on the press conference Monday saying, yeah, these guys nowadays, they would rather communicate on social media than even talk to you. And so next thing you know, they're shopping him like it's crazy in a trade.
Yeah, you just hit on what I wanted to follow up with, and I saw that comment saying, yeah, I hate that they do that, and rather they'd come talk to me. And I'm thinking that is a coach with no respect and no influence, no power in there. I can't imagine. Can you imagine Bill Belichick, Mike Tomlin stepping up to the mic saying, well, boy, I wish he wouldn't do that. I wish he'd come talk to me, but that's how it is these days. I mean, it just wouldn't fly. He doesn't have any juice in that building.
No, he doesn't. But again, if they end up trying to trade him, he does have enough juice and he still has the job. How? I have no idea. But it's just remarkable to think of how bad this is.
Hey, John, I was just really quick reading an article, Alex Smith saying, he definitely wanted to reach out to Dak Prescott because of the whole thing about the risk of infection. And I guess it was, I don't know if it makes any kind of difference if it, how it's handled and everything, but it sounds like no matter what, if you have a compound fracture, that you're at some risk.
Yeah, it breaks through the skin.
Yeah, I wonder if we know that, is he out of the woods or what's the latest?
I think so, because I don't know how long it was with his 17 surgeries and that he was in the hospital, but Dak was out on Monday. I mean, he was home out of the hospital, and they wouldn't let him out of the hospital if there's a chance of infection. So I think that's a positive sign there. So I think that's encouraging. So maybe he's not out of the woods or anything like that, but at least he's in a better spot right now.
Is Alex Smith going to continue there in Washington, or does it sound like Kyle Allen going to be healthy enough to play?
It sounds as though what they want to do is go to stay with Kyle for another week, maybe another week or two, somewhere in that neighborhood, and then at some point hand it over. Because remember, one thing we still have to see is how he bounces back from the limited time he was on the field, because he ended up getting hit 6 times on sacks, and so it was good. But I think they almost want to go with Kyle Allen. But remember, Kyle's not healthy right now, so it could be Alex. But ultimately, it looks like it's going to be Alex's job. And then the thought is that the Redskins will try to trade Dwayne Haskins.
Professor, we have Tuesday afternoon football.
They're starting already. Dave's mad because he can't see it. But
John, what's the score? What's happening?
I don't know.
Give me a play-by-play.
I can't. Well, I'll do that in 20 minutes.
John, give me a sideline report.
Right now, the Bills have injury problems because John Brown, the wide receiver, is not going to be able to play. He's got a calf injury. Then you don't have Matt Milano, the linebacker. He's out. He's got a pectoral injury. And then, of course, the big one is Tre'Davious White, the cornerback, has a bad injury with a back, and so he's out of the game. So they come in a little undermanned. Meanwhile, the Tennessee Titans are pretty much short on talent because they had to make six moves off the practice squad to be able to go ahead, and that included two players who were COVID tested, and they took him out. So they're down three starters on offense.
Well, they just kicked off, John. Buffalo's favored by three. Who do you like?
I like Buffalo. Again, the injuries certainly it hurts the Buffalo Bills, but in the end, I mean, Tennessee has not practiced in 2.5 weeks. They had a light practice on, I think, 90 minutes on Saturday. They've not even been in the building more than just one day, and they're so short on players. Again, three starters that are not going to be there on offense, and including their left tackle, and they can put pressure on the quarterback with the Buffalo Bills. I say the Bills win.
John, last night we saw the Saints get it done in overtime versus the Chargers. Chargers miss a 51-yard field goal that would have secured things. Justin Herbert is really impressive.
Yes.
4 touchdowns last night, 20 of 34. I mean, yeah, he makes mistakes here and there, but, for a guy that they didn't intend on having him out there because of Tyrod Taylor, he looks surprisingly good.
Oh, no question. I think that they've hit on a real good one there, but I worry about Anthony Lynn if at the end of the year he's going to be able to keep the job and keep the quarterback. I mean, he's going to keep the quarterback because he's already named him the starter, and rightfully so. He's that good. But the problem that I see is that, Anthony Lynn can't finish games. They can't win. I mean, they were one of the worst teams in football, if not the worst last year, in one-possession games, and they're 1-4 this year. I mean, you got a quarterback who's good enough as a rookie with no playing time in the preseason or anything else, finding out he was going to get his first start with like 30 seconds warning, and he's been fantastic. I mean, think about the idea that he's been able to take Drew Brees and Patrick Mahomes into overtime games. But the problem is they don't win.
Hey, John, it's kind of interesting what the Saints are trying to get done here, exploring the possibility of playing their home games at LSU, where they can have, outside of the city limits, mm-hmm. or, the mayor or whatever of New Orleans. And he was the one that said, I don't think we have the first darn clue about this thing. But, yeah, it's kind of interesting that they would go out and play at Death Valley, huh?
Well, the thought is that, the league – and again, we didn't know if there's going to be any update on this in today's NFL owners protocol meeting that, indoor games right now are prohibited. Sure, you can do it in Indianapolis because they can open the roof and do all those different things. But in dome stadiums, because it's indoors, they're not allowing any fans in the stands. And that hasn't changed. And, you don't see it in Minnesota. I mean, I guess you can see it to a certain degree in Atlanta because they can open some things up. But in the end, the idea is, and Sean's really making a push because he wants fans because he needs the fans. I mean, you can see, his team should be, as talented as they are, they should be 5-0. And right now they're 3-2 and barely hanging in there. And so he wants the fans in the stands, and he can get more fans over at the LSU stadium in a chance to get that there. So we'll see if he's going to be able to win. But right now the mayor is kind of not saying, and the people in the state are pretty much shaking their head saying no.
John, a big blow for the Arizona Cardinals with Chandler Jones and his biceps injury. How long is he going to be out?
He's going to be out the whole year. I mean, that was a bad one. And so you're talking about a guy since 2016 has had more sacks than any player in the National Football League. That is a big blow. And remember, their big thing is defense. Defense is the thing that they needed to improve the most because that Kyler Murray was going to improve his game, although he's been up and down, particularly the last couple of weeks. But that's going to hurt them because now you take their main sack guy and knock him out. That's not good.
John, I saw that Richard Sherman had a setback in his recovery, and there were quotes from Shanahan talking about, well, we're going to try these different shots and things to try to get the swelling down. How serious is that situation?
I don't know if
them?
It's serious, but it's a setback where he's not going to play this week, and you don't know how long it's going to take. But isn't that the luck right now of the 49ers? I mean, they're in desperate shape, and their season, now after going 2-3 and losing three home games to teams that didn't have winning records, they're in a spot right now. Well, I guess Arizona has a winning record, but they're in a spot right now where they have 7 games coming up where if they lose – 5 of those 7, which is very likely because it's a real tough streak, they are in big trouble.
Hey, John, Mike Tomlin still one of my favorite coaches in the league. I just like the way he handles business. But we're coming up on this whole thing. He's dismissing this big drama over Miles Garrett and the backup quarterback there in
Mason Rudolph.
So kind of trying to downplay that a little bit. What do you know? Like, have they reached out to each other? Do we know anything about that relationship? Or
no, they haven't reached out at all. And you would have to anticipate that the Steelers weren't happy, and Mason Rudolph wasn't happy with the fact that, you know, he got all that money, because, you know, now he's got what, $25 million a year. No, it's like. And having covered that division and covered the rivalries there, it's going to get nasty. And that's why, you know, Tomlin, you know, didn't want to make it look like a WWE battle or any kind of a TV event or anything like that. But you know it's going to be nasty because, again, you know, you've got, you know, two teams that don't like each other and a whole team in Pittsburgh and a whole bunch of fans in Pittsburgh. And they're going to have some fans and fans that don't like Miles Garrett. So this is going to be interesting to see the first blow up. And I think there'll be a blow up.
Professor, I know the Cowboys won't be the same without Dak Prescott, but as far as I'm concerned, they have one of the best backups in the league. You think Andy Dalton's going to come in and do a good job?
Yes. In fact, here's the weird thing that I was thinking today is that, you know, we know we look at the NFC East and see that they only have two non-division wins, or, you know, they're the worst we've seen in NFL history. And so you figure it's going to be a division where it's going to be six or seven wins to win it. It could be six wins. But what I'm looking at right now is that, you know, Washington, the football team there, and, you know, the Eagles are struggling and may not get back on it. And we know how bad it is with everybody else in the division. I mean, it's possible that the Cowboys with Andy Dalton can go 5-1 in a division and possibly win the division and be the first team in the league to clinch a division title, even though they're not going to have a winning record. Because, again, all you have to do is win the division games, and they won their first one 3 points over the terrible New York Giants. And so if they can come back and have success in the division and go 5-1, they'll win the division going away. It's either going to be Philly or Dallas, by the way.
John, I was seeing this story about Los Angeles and Dallas becoming potential NFL playoff bubble locations. Is that the plan? There will be a bubble for the playoffs?
No, or what? That's not the plan. That's an alternative that they have, and one that they would prefer they would not want to do. And so, they even had the conference call today and said the same thing. But, you know, like anything else, you have to make arrangements because you don't know where things are going to go. I mean, certainly you see they made adjustments and adjustments here, adjustments there, to try to just get through the first 5 weeks of the season. But, you know, that's not the plan. I mean, if there's going to be any kind of a bubble or anything of that nature, it's going to be more in the team facility than it is anything else. But that's a last alternative in case they need to do it.
John, Aaron Donald. How many sacks?
Four. 7.5 for the season.
7.5 for the season. I couldn't believe when I looked that stat up. And, you know, there's a little article about, hey, is this an overreaction or is this too grand of a statement or whatever, talking about possibly breaking Michael Strahan's record in 2001, 22.5. What do you think?
I think he can do it. I mean, he can do just about anything because he's that good. That's the amazing part about this guy. And you can see he was totally unblockable in the game on Sunday. I mean, he just went to Washington. I know Washington didn't have Brandon Scherff, and they had some injuries on the line, but it was devastating to see how well he can do. The guy is just absolutely remarkable. Great, great player.
On pace for 24, they've calculated.
Isn't that amazing?
It is amazing. And, you know,
interior.
Yeah, that's what my point was going to be. You're rushing from in there. The other one that really surprises me, or I think is impressive, is Bruce Smith. Mm-hmm. Because he was a true 3-4 defensive end for most of his career. And he's got 200, and I don't think anybody, maybe Aaron Donald will get there. But it's so hard to get him from the inside. And, you know, you could say, well, you're close to the quarterback, you got a direct line. But still, I mean, you're getting double teamed, and I'm sure he's getting double teamed a ton. Yeah, that guy is – he might be one of the best – I mean, he's got
to
be a top
You have to put
five.
Him up there with the Bruce Smiths and Reggie Whites and all that stuff. And, you know, it's nothing has changed. Nobody's able to block him. I mean, you know, four sacks in the game on Sunday as a defensive tackle? Remarkable.
Yeah.
Professor, at the bottom of the hour, we're going to be talking about the Rams. Steve Wyche and Mike Silver from the NFL Network kind of feel like the Rams might be better than the Seahawks. Do you agree with them?
I don't agree with that, but I think that they're the main challenger to the Seahawks. And you know, and you can certainly say that, and you look down the schedule, who are the toughest games going to be coming against? And you know, we'll see. Obviously, the division games are going to be tough, but their toughest games are going to be at Buffalo and two games against the Rams. And so they are a main but where the difference is, as great as Sean McVay has been calling plays and doing such a great job with that offense, Russell Wilson's been better. And, you know, the one thing that you have to kind of put the question mark on right now is, and again, you can put question marks in just about everything because, you know, Seattle ended up beating, you know, they're 5-0 and they had five wins against four teams with losing records, but they were all talented teams. And what you have with the four wins for the Rams, they have all four against the terrible NFC East. So they're 4-0 against them. And, you know, you can talk about the remarkable performance that they had coming back in Buffalo from a 25-point deficit and almost winning that game. But you can also say, now on the flip side, they got down by that many points. And so I'd say right now they're the main challengers.
John, I saw some quotes from Arthur Blank talking about the future of Matt Ryan, where he was really noncommittal, saying, well, you know, it's not really up to me. It'll be up to the new GM. And, you know, he kind of abandoned that Falcon for life thing. Do you think his time there in Atlanta is limited?
It's debatable right now. I think what you're looking at is an owner who's just simply being honest because, we still don't know where the cap is going to be, but they're one of the top four teams right now for cap problems. But they're in one of the worst shapes, even though they have, you know, less cap room than what's there for, say, New Orleans and Philadelphia and all that stuff. But you look at their contracts, and I've done it, and they're going to have a tough time trying to be able to find a way to get rid of money and get under the cap. And so that has to be a consideration. And also, you know, you can see how honest he was when he says, okay, why'd you make the firing now? And he says, hey, this was going to be a playoff or bust season for both Thomas Dimitroff and Dan Quinn. At 0-5, we're not making the playoffs. And so I think what he's thinking in the back of his mind, you know, if they lose enough games, and they're not tanking, but if they lose enough games, they very well could come back and get Trevor Lawrence. And if that's going to be the case, he'll be the quarterback and Matt Ryan will be traded.
John, I'm happy for Teddy Bridgewater. 73%, 1,460 yards, 6 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. But considering what he's been through and breaking his leg, and he was good and on his way at Minnesota and just didn't work out, was a backup in New Orleans, and they're saying now with, I believe, is Christian McCaffrey, is he almost off IR? Or
not yet, been... no. He's like 4 to 6 weeks. He's been there for 3. But how about the fact that they've won the 3 games without him?
Yeah, they're 3-2, and so they're talking about this being Teddy Bridgewater's team. So, and really, you know, McCaffrey, the contract he got there, it was like, this is the face of our franchise. But sounds like Bridgewater is really winning people over.
As he should.
Literally, yeah.
I mean, he's that good. And, you know, what's interesting is that, the two coaches that now, and this is probably going to not go over well because, again, we always say it every year, that could, because, you know, you have to think right now at Pete Carroll at 5-0 should be the leading candidate for coach of the year because he's done such a great job. But, you know, you look at Kevin Stefanski at 4-1 in Cleveland, new coach. You look at Matt Rhule, who looks like a great new coach. You know, he's 3-2. And, you know, they gutted the defense and went young on defense, but they knew that they had enough talent on offense because they had speed. But to come out of the breaks like that, get 2 losses at the beginning, but to get 3 wins like they have, I mean, they're looking pretty good right now. Again, are they a wild card? Probably not, but they're way ahead of where people were thought they were going to be, and so much of that has to be the great play of what Teddy Bridgewater's been doing and the great coaching of Matt Rhule.
John, we talked to Chris Carson yesterday, and his carries a game are down from 18 last year to 12 this year. He's on the receiving end of a lot of Russell Wilson passes, more so than ever before. But where do you see his contract being in the offseason, whether he re-signs with the Seahawks or somewhere else?
I still think that, and he probably won't like me saying this, but you know, one of the two guys is going to get franchised because the franchise number is going to dip a little bit. It's either going to be Shaq Griffin or it's going to be Chris Carson. I mean, you know, the way he plays – and what he does for this offense. And obviously, the the count is down because the average, when you miss a game and you're only playing five games, you don't. And the first game there wasn't carries because they needed to pass the ball against Atlanta. I mean, he's doing fine. I mean, I think now what you have to look at with Chris, particularly like we saw Sunday, is touches. Because it's not the carries, it's also the touches. Because in the first half, I mean, he was the main target as far as checkdowns and screens and things of that nature because of the cover two defense that the Vikings were playing. But, I mean, can you justify saying that he should be paid $10 million a year? I'd say yes. But I think right now, if he gets franchised, that franchise tag might be a little under $8
million. John, can you justify franchising Shaquille Griffin?
Yes.
Can you really?
Did he go to the Pro Bowl last year?
Well, I know. I know about that.
Did he have two good games this in the last 2 weeks?
He just doesn't look like a franchise tag kind of guy to me. I think he's playing reasonably well, but I don't look at him and go, "Yeah, that's a guy you got to keep for sure."
No, but what are you going to do to replace him?
Well, I'm not sure about that, John.
Okay, you're not sure about it.
I haven't thought it through that much, but how much would you be paying Shaquille Griffin to keep him if you franchise tag him?
I'd say
$15 million or something.
What you're looking at, because is he a franchise? And again, when I say the franchise tag, remember, I'm saying it with the franchise tag being different than any year since like 2012, because then in the flat cap year in 2012, the average franchise tag went down 20%, and now we're talking about a $20+ million decrease in the salary cap. So that's you're getting a franchise tag, and it's only a franchise tag by name only, because it's probably going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of $11.5 to $12 million. I think in the open market, you can just, because what I looked with him, the franchise guys, and they're considered to be, the top five cornerbacks in the league. Is he top five? Absolutely not. But he's in that group, say from 5 to 18 or somewhere, 6 to 18, where you can justify transitioning him. Okay, but again, the franchise tag is only a franchise tag in name only because you get to keep the player. I mean, in the open market, he might be able to get 14 in a normal year. He won't probably be able to do that next year. But you don't want to get rid of players who've been to the Pro Bowl and have meant so much for winning franchise.
John, my good friend, why were you talking about a pitcher's pants being too tight this morning?
Because Curtis Rogers did the report card and asked me to grade that.
I thought when I read the show sheet, I thought it was Sean Salisbury was with you talking about it. I'm like, why are my two good friends talking about this? But now it's just you, but you were asked to.
I was asked to, yes.
Curtis Rogers.
Yes, Curtis Rogers has complete independence in being able to pick the topics
for the report card. All right, so I looked it up. Walker Buehler, he's a Dodger pitcher.
Yeah.
And
Buehler.
Anyone? Did you give him, what did you give
him?
For?
An F.
An F for his tight pants.
Well, no. In fact, what I did, I gave
the reporter who asked a question.
I gave
about
the reporter
it.
An F because on a touchy game like that was emotional for the Dodgers to come back and ask about tight pants. That's just bad reporting.
That's bad form.
Bad form.
I give that guy an A, John.
I gave him an F.
That was a Jim Moore question.
But I gave Buehler a B+ because I thought his response was very professional. It's like let's not now. No, don't bring this up now.
Yeah, that's a gym type of question. John, we appreciate it. We'll do it again tomorrow.
Buehler.
You'd say, I don't know about you, but if he's making $19 million out there, I don't think he should be having that tight of pants.
Yeah, something along those lines. I know you'll probably poo-poo this question, but I'm looking at those thinking to myself, I wouldn't wear those pants if I was making that kind of money, and maybe I'm wrong.
Hey, Bob, I wouldn't bring up tight pants and poo-poo at the same time.
Yeah, that's probably a bad combo, Jim.
What a way to go out, Clayton. You know how to go out in style.
On that note, we'll talk tomorrow, John.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, if you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, just download the podcast at 710sports.com. Well, a couple of NFL Network hosts are pretty high on the Rams as the biggest competition to the Seahawks. Let you hear what they had to say when we come back with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave White, and Jim Moore.
A reminder, you've got a radio in your home. If you've got a smart speaker, tell it to play 710 ESPN Seattle or 710 AM. turns into a radio right there. Coming up in about 15 minutes, Terry Bradshaw calls for Matt Patricia's job. Mike Tomlin says this is football, not reality TV. And Jose Altuve could have the yips. Sounds like a feel-good story to me. We'll get to that coming up in a little less than 15 minutes. But we talked about the idea that the Rams seem to be the biggest competition for the Seahawks, at least right now through five games. And there are a couple of guys from the NFL Network who seem to believe that as well. First of all, Mike Silver talking about the Rams and thinking they could end up being the best team in this division.
Yeah, Steve, I think when all is said and done, the Rams may end up being the best team in the NFC. I mean, obviously, they got to get through the Seahawks, too. But you're right about Jared Goff, Sean McVay. Really late last season, starting with that big game they almost pulled out against the 49ers at Levi's, started changing the offense, diversifying. Brandon Staley has energized that defense. They've got two stars, Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey, and a lot of people that guys haven't heard of out there, but they're playing pretty well on defense. The offense is red hot, and do not sleep on this Rams team. They are one bad call away from being undefeated, lost after a great comeback against the Bills. People are saying Josh Allen should be in the MVP conversation. If that's true, then Jared Goff should absolutely be there too.
So Jared Goff is having a good year. 71.7% completion percentage right now. 1,300 yards. He's got 8 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, a quarterback rating of 108.8.
As long as his helmet speaker doesn't go out.
Yeah, as long as he's got the little voice of an angel inside of his head. And then quickly, one more from Steve Wyche talking about the gap between the Seahawks and the Rams isn't that big.
It's not significant. It's not significant. And here's why. Because, you know, people aren't getting, why isn't Jared Goff being talked about a little bit more? This guy's killing it right now. He's playing very well. What Sean McVay is doing with their variety of talents, right? They have no singular talent like they had before with Todd Gurley. They are mixing things up so well. The offensive line is playing well like it did 2 years ago when they went to the Super Bowl. Jared Goff, to me, is not being talked about enough for how well he is playing and really keeping everybody in order. I think the Rams are a very, very good football team.
Well, they're not wrong. I mean, the Rams look to be good right now, and they're right. That call was controversial in that game that they ended up losing. So being a bad call away from potentially being undefeated, they've allowed 90 points so far this season.
Their defense is unbelievably good. Yeah. I mean, well, I would say surprisingly good, just because, you know, there was lots of talk about, oh, they don't have anybody other than Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey, but they're number 3 in points. They're number 10 against the run. They're number 2 in the pass game. You know,
pass defense?
Yeah. So, and then same in total yards, they've only given up 304 yards a game. So that puts them also in the top 5. There's 0 turnover ratio, but I mean, you have Aaron Donald, who's just unstoppable. Jalen Ramsey is really good. I mean, he's as advertised. So,
and Goff is playing really well. You look at those numbers. I mean, this is
he's thrown 3 picks, but Russ has thrown 3.
He's got, Russ has got what, 19 touchdowns?
Yeah. Goff's a lot 8. More touchdowns.
But he's efficient, and 71.7%. I mean, he is playing well. They are the scary. We talked about this 5-game stretch coming up. You got 2 with the Cardinals, you got the 49ers, and then you got Buffalo and the Rams. Rams are the scariest opponent in that whole collection right there, with Buffalo coming in right behind them, Jim.
Well, yeah, and you look at what they're doing, and the Bills had a 28-3 lead on the Rams, and the Rams came all the way back to take the lead, and then Buffalo, you mentioned that, Bob, they got the benefit of a bad call and ended up winning that game to remain unbeaten. But you look at the Rams statistically, and Dave already talked about them defensively, number 4 overall, and then total offense, they're number 5 overall. And you look at the running backs that they have, they lost Todd Gurley. Well, no big deal there. They just came back with Daryl Henderson, Malcolm Brown, and Cam Akers, their first-round pick, or second-round pick. He was the first pick for them anyway. And they're running the ball well. All 3 of those guys are going to be healthy this week. Look at Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods. They got Higby as a tight end, Josh Reynolds. So, yeah, that's a really good team. And, Bob, you and I thought they were going to finish last in the NFC West.
So did Clayton.
So we were wrong about that. And it's an interesting position they're in now because they face San Francisco on Sunday Night Football. The 49ers are 2-3. The Rams are 4-1. So we're so used to, we're conditioned to rooting against the 49ers. But this is a week when you got to root for them.
Yeah, you're right. And you know, they may be – we'll see. You know, the head-to-head matchup will tell us a lot between the Seahawks and the Rams. But what's the biggest concern? Is it their defense? I mean, you look at it, they're the most complete team. Seahawks offense is better. Russell Wilson is better. But their defense is so substantially better than the Seahawks defense in terms of the numbers, the points allowed, yards allowed, all of that. So you feel like you're looking at a more complete team in the Rams, if we're being honest?
Yeah. Well, I'll say something that's promising. Okay, I've been using that word quite a bit about our defense.
Okay. Is it hopeful?
I've used other words.
Say again, Jim?
I've used other words.
Yeah. Dismal, bleak.
None of which can be repeated.
No, they play the Seahawks are playing the edges a lot better. And I know it's not reflected in the numbers, but you know, go back to the fly sweep that the Atlanta tried to run. There was another one against the Patriots that was like a pitch fly sweep that Ugo Amadi played really well, made a tackle for loss. The other day, that Adam Thielen play, they didn't make the tackle, but they read it, and it was a hustle play to get down the line. That's what has been killing him is the stuff out on the perimeter, the fly sweeps, and then all the stuff that comes off of it, like a screen back to the other side. And, you know, those are the things that have killed the Seahawks. You know, when Quentin Dunbar stopped that fly sweep the first game of the year against Atlanta, I was mm-hmm. like, this team hadn't stopped a fly sweep since 2018. I mean, they've really, it's been a long time, and they are all of a sudden playing those plays better. So, but when your defense is giving up yards, it's giving up yards. And again, 403 yards, their offense per game. I mean, they're going to be a tough one to shut down. That'll be the biggest problem. I feel like our offense can kind of hang with pretty yeah. much anybody. The offensive line has not been bad. I mean, last year when they, I think Dwayne Brown went down. I mean, Jamarco Jones came in and he blocked up Aaron Donald and Fowler, and you know he was doing a pretty good job against them. But they couldn't beat him at the Rams. But still, you know, maybe they can control Aaron Donald. But you know, to me, it's more about what the Seahawks defensively have been victimized by, and that's all of those things just going outside. And then you know they come back with the deep crossing patterns. I mean, it's still going to be a total challenge, but it's promising that they're playing those plays better.
All right, coming up, you heard me talk about it. Terry Bradshaw calls for Matt Patricia's job. Mike Tomlin says this is football, not reality TV. And Jose Altuve hopefully could have the yips. We'll hear more about that when we sweep the dial. Coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
One of the hard things to do in this job is we love a lot of people. Unfortunately, we have to be brutally honest, too. That's why today, Jimmy brings out the fork, and I'm bringing out the spoon, fellas, because you know why, Mike?
Why?
I'm going to stir things up. I'm going to mix things up a little bit.
Oh, I like
bring
that.
A little something different to it. Mm. You can love them, but they have got to show that they can coach. Patricia in Detroit can't coach. Smartest guy in the world. Rocket scientist. Engineer. Can't coach a lick. Can't hold a lead when they're leading by 10 points. He's got to be gone.
Wow. Terry Bradshaw says Matt Patricia can't coach a lick, and he's got to be gone. Jim, I know that upset you.
Yeah, what a shame. Such a good guy.
Well, before we get into Jim's very scientific approach of evaluating Matt Patricia, it doesn't sound like he's a good dude. It doesn't sound like he knows how to lead guys. And, you know, here's the thing. Just because you coach under a guy like Belichick, that doesn't mean that you can go do it. And again, I've said there's a reason why I like Mike Tomlin, because the things he says and the way he says them, I can tell that he's very consistent. And, you know, Patricia seems to be kind of all over the board from what I've heard from some sources. And, you know, he's just not leading these guys. He's not inspiring them. I mean, you don't have to be Pete Carroll, but you have to have an it factor, you know, so... It's just he doesn't have it. He's a great defensive coordinator. Now, is he a rocket scientist? That's what Bradshaw was talking
about. Yeah,
you know, if you're Terry Bradshaw, pretty much everybody's a rocket scientist to you.
Everybody else seems really smart.
Yeah, but I'm just kidding, Terry. I like him. But, Yeah, you either have it or you don't. And it doesn't seem like Matt Patricia has it.
Jim, if he never made that comment to the reporter, how do you think you'd feel about him?
Oh, I'd probably feel differently. I'd probably be thinking, oh, he's having a tough time there in Detroit. I wonder why he can't win. He coached under Belichick. You'd think that he'd be doing better with a... Because I've always liked Matt Stafford. I don't know how you guys feel about Stafford, but I always like him as a quarterback. But, boy, just they're 1-3 right now. And as opposed to, I mean, you look at the Vikings, a one-win team there. That's a good one-win team. The Lions are not. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to Matt Patricia getting fired.
Mike, you've mentioned Myles Garrett a couple times, and it's the first time your team will be on the same field with him since last year's altercation with Mason. What's your message to the team this week about avoiding distractions and putting last year kind of behind them?
There really is no message. My day-to-day existence kind of relays that message that you suggested. There's a lot on the table in reference to this game in terms of stakes. They're a 4-1 team. We're trying to remain undefeated. You know, we're not looking for that low-hanging fruit or that reality TV storylines and so forth. This is a big game here in 2020.
Yes, yes,
I like
yes.
Mike Tomlin.
That's why I love Mike Tomlin. And remember last year, he's like, we need volunteers, not hostages.
Yeah.
It was one of his quotes.
He seems to be the polar opposite of Adam Gase, where I don't think anybody would challenge him. I believe he's got absolute respect amongst that locker room. And if there are issues, it's kept in the house, as we saw with two of the bigger malcontents we've seen in recent years with Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown. And we didn't hear a peep about what was going on until after they were gone, really.
Yeah, and he never complained about it or anything. I mean, he pulled really a Pete Carroll. I mean, and I like that he can be flexible that way. I think that's part of what makes him a good coach, is that you have to have your standards, but then, you know, sometimes you have to make exceptions. It's an extraordinary business. I mean, you got, some incredibly talented physically people, yet emotionally they may be not at all.
In a state of arrested development.
Yeah, great way to put it. And he's able to lead. I like his directness, though, the way he answered that question. My day-to-day existence is not about reality TV, is basically what he said.
I got to admit, though, if I was covering the Browns or if I was covering the Steelers, I'd be writing about that all week long. Myles Garrett and what he did last year.
Of course
year
you would, Jim.
With Rudolph. Well, yeah, of course.
Low-hanging fruit is what he called it.
Yeah, clickbait.
Jim's plucking the low-hanging fruit.
Well, wouldn't you?
Maybe it'd come up once. I wouldn't spend the whole week.
I'd spend all week on it. Yeah.
You'd try to get him to say things, wouldn't you?
How many times has that ever happened, what we saw last year?
Well, I've never seen it happen.
Yeah.
I've seen it once.
Again, I'd milk
in
it.
In practice.
You see Myles Garrett's stats this year?
He's ridiculous.
6 sacks.
Yeah.
He's got 10 quarterback hits and 3 forced fumbles.
He's a beast.
Aaron Donald has 7.5 sacks.
They're both beasts.
1-4 against the Oakland A's, just up the road in L.A. Rosarena takes off, out in the grass, Altuve. And Choi, safe. Oh, no, I beg your pardon. He's going to be safe here. Brian Altuve just lobbed it over to first base. He one-hopped it to Gurriel. Gurriel could not make the play. Inning number 2 of this game, 2. On the ground, right into that shift. Altuve, and another low throw, and it's another error. Boy, Jose Altuve with 2 errors. Lau reaches. He tried to put a little something on that one, Frenchie, but that was just straight into the ground.
That's a shame.
Steve Sachs.
Altuve just throwing it right into the ground. Maybe he's got the yips. We'll find out. Dusty Baker said, quote, "We were very surprised. That was his first throwing error of the season. He made 2 today. You just hope he..." I'm surprised Dusty said this. You just hope he isn't getting the yips. I don't even think you say that publicly. You don't plant that seed. He said, because invariably they come in bunches. You have to flush it and move on, or else it multiplies. Dusty, what are you doing, man? You're throwing gas on the fire. I love it.
Maybe he knows his player and thinks that that's the best way to motivate him.
Yeah, that it could be, but it makes me happy either way.
Do you think a buzzer could help his throwing at all?
Oh, good call.
I'm certain if it could help that he might have one. He might be having one strapped to him soon.
Yeah, it looks like you're going to get your wish here, though, Bob. The Rays, really good season, 2-0 series lead, and maybe they'll be getting the brooms out there in Tampa Bay.
That'd be delicious, as El Hombre likes to say.
How would a buzzer work? How would you do that? Would you connect it to his, like, nether regions, and every time he made a bad throw, you get zapped?
Punish him.
Or maybe connect it to the first baseman, and then when he hears it, he'd know where to throw it. Something like that. I don't know. Yeah, Dave, I'm with you, though. I don't really like rooting against Altuve. He was so fun to root for, being a little man and doing what he was doing. But, boy, I think he was the biggest cheater of all.
Maybe. They're all complicit, Jim. They're all complicit. I'm actually rooting against Bregman and Correa more.
Bregman was the one that was the most smug about it, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, and Correa's come out after they, you know, got into the postseason talking about, well, what are you going to say now? We're just a good team. I'm thinking, really?
You should wait.
Yeah, that's the attitude. You're going to embrace the villain role? All right, get ready to be treated like a villain then. Because that's what they are. So, yeah, the more that they're embarrassed and the more they – because they didn't have to face the wrath this year. The only junk they got was from, you know, a couple of players here and there, but they didn't have the stands full. They didn't have a 162-game season where 81 of them were in enemy territory where people were going to let them have it. Yeah. They got off easy. They got off light. So,
Bob, do you like cheaters?
No. Especially don't like the Astros.
You don't like the Astros.
You know, what's funny is when it first happened, yeah, as a baseball fan, I was like, yeah, man, you don't do that. But I was sort of like, you know, I still like the guys on the team. They made a mistake. But the attitude is what got me. You know, Bregman coming out there smiling, laughing, and Correa, all everybody just being indignant about the whole thing. I was like, really? All right. Then forget you guys. I hope you go down in a big fiery mess.
Maybe somebody told Bregman a joke or something before you saw him, Bob.
I don't think that happened. I don't think that's possible. Did not happen. All right, no player spotlight today because of the bye week, so we get a full serving of El Hombre. Michael Bradley, he'll join us next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.